Would you stop scratching and give me a beat? Ouch! Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce the hi-hat. Go on. That's good. Now the tambourine. Right now.
This is Sam Sebrin from Athens, and you are listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the network.
You've tuned in to All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXE sustaining supporters who provide critical monthly support. Thank you.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jess Puglisi of Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You have tuned into the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. I'm Tom Rowe in Acra. Andrea Macko is reporting for Porcupine Soup that another resident of Greene County has died due to COVID-19. Greene County Public Health on August 20th reported the county's 77th death from the coronavirus. No personal information, including their residence, location, age, or vaccination status, was provided. The county reported 12 new cases on Friday, August 20th, bringing the number of active cases to 51, bringing the total number of documented cases to 3,502 since March 2020. Five people have currently are hospitalized and 65 are quarantined. As of August 20th, the state of New York reported that 24,003 Greene County residents have been fully vaccinated, but the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention this week recommended the immunocompromised receive a third shot of either the Moderna or Pfizer vaccines. The Greene County Public Health is encouraging residents to sign up for third dose information and has established an online form for the purpose of gathering contact information for anyone who might be immunocompromised. The form can be found online at greengovernment.com/COVID signup. Those who submit their information will receive email updates from the county as to when they are eligible for the booster shot, including how to register for an appointment. Residents may also register at their pharmacy or through a state-run site. Read more about this story at porcupinesoup.com. Sam Raldins is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Hudson Schools District officials are asking the public for input to help with the Board of Education's search for a new superintendent. District residents are being asked to complete the board's community survey by September 3rd. The district has approximately 1,700 students enrolled in kindergarten through 12th grade and employs 600 people. The quote, the survey results will help the board develop criteria for the next superintendent and questions to be asked during interviews, unquote, according to a statement posted at the district website. The survey asked respondents to rate what type of work experience would be most valuable in a new superintendent, as well as the skills a successful candidate should possess. Current Superintendent Maria L. Suttmeyer tendered her resignation in June, making it effective December 31st. Suttmeyer has been employed by the district for 23 years, 10 of those as superintendent. The community survey can be found at the Hudson School District's website, hudsoncsd.org. Read more about this story at hudsonvalley360.com. And the Daily Freeman is reporting that the 175th Dutchess County Fair will open August 24th and take place from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday. Quote, we're excited, said Vicky Imperati, the fair's administrative operations manager. Quote, we're also concerned like everyone else is, but we're excited to be back, unquote. Imperati said some changes have been made because of the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. All employees will be following CDC guidelines, which requires those who are unvaccinated against the coronavirus to wear masks whenever indoors. Fairgoers are also urged but not required to wear a mask when inside the fairground buildings. Imperati said the aisles in all the buildings have been made wider and traffic will flow in only one direction. The fairgrounds have also added additional hand-washing stations and installed signage encouraging mask wearing and social distancing. The Raphael's talent search and entertainment tent and some of what Imperati called, quote, high touch point, unquote, areas such as the AgriVenture Children's Activity Tent will be absent from the fair this year. All tickets must be purchased online or at self-serve kiosks near the entrance. Grandstand performances will be included in the admission price. Information is available at duchessfair.com, and you can read more about this story in the Daily Freeman and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
The UK duo 6 and 8 applies a formula of lush atmospherics and throaty poetry that adds up to a provocative mix. And we'll hear a track on the next Deep Threes. Plus, music from the Torque Trio, Art Sonic, and Red Dawn. Deep Threes, where will the music take you?
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Amateur Radio Newsline report number 2286 with a release date of Friday, August 20th, 2021, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST, sorting out the tragedy in Haiti after an earthquake and a tropical storm. The FCC delays its new $35 fee, and the Intrepid DX Group drops its Bouvet plans. All this and more as Amateur Radio Newsline report number 2286 comes your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from Wadsworth, Ohio, here's Stephen Kinford, N8WB.
We begin this week with a story that was still developing as Newsline went to production on Thursday, August 19th. Rocketed by a 7.2 magnitude earthquake on August 14th and battered afterward by Tropical Storm Grace, the island nation of Haiti was still planning on amateur radio assistance. Jean-Robert Gaillard, HH2JR, president of the Radio Club of Haiti, told the IARU's Region 2 Emergency Coordinator Carlos Alberto Santa Maria Gonzalez, CO2JC, that a number of churches around the island would be willing to be active because their membership included licensed hams, but they needed donations of modern equipment. Jean-Robert told Carlos in an email that meanwhile the hams were helping in other ways, distributing medicine and supplies and aiding with transportation when possible. According to various media reports, by August 18th, the death toll had climbed past 2,000 and was expected to continue to rise. Jean-Robert wrote, quote, I am afraid the worst is yet to happen, end quote. Region 2 of the IARU asked, meanwhile, that hams in the Americas keep emergency frequencies clear at 3.750 megahertz, 7.150 megahertz, and 14.330 megahertz. Bouvet Island is no longer in the sights of the world's most prominent de-expedition teams. John Williams, VK4JJW, gives us the details.
The Intrepid DX Group's planned trip to activate Bouvet Island would have been the third such activation by a group in the next few years, but now it's been called off. Paul Ewing, N6PSE, the group's president, made a brief statement that appeared in the Daily DX, saying that the intrepid DX group is instead taking a fresh look at the 10 most wanted DX entities. He said, quote, "We plan to activate a different rare and much needed entity in January-February 2023. That's now our focus," end quote. He said that with teams set to sail to the island this year and next year, being the number three team is, quote, "not comfortable for us," end quote. He added that the group wishes a safe and productive journey in November of 2022 for its former 3Y0J teammates, now reconstituted and headed by co-leaders Ken, LA7GIA, Rune, LA7THA, and Erwin, LB1QI. Meanwhile, the 3Y0I team expects to set sail later this year. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm John Williams, VK4JJW.
The FCC has reported a delay in implementing its new $35 fee for U.S. hams receiving new licenses, hams renewing or modifying existing licenses, as well as hams applying for vanity call signs. The fees were supposed to take effect this summer. According to the ARRL, however, volunteer examiner coordinators learned during a recent virtual meeting with FCC staff that the agency still needs to make changes to its universal licensing system software and adjust other procedures before it can begin receiving the fees. The announcement appeared on the ARRL website on Monday, August 16th. The fees are not expected to take effect until early 2022. They are to be paid directly to the FCC with the help of the agency's online system known as the FCC Pays Fees System. Hams in Romania have proposed some changes that could have an impact on radio license portability throughout Europe. Ed Durant, DD5LP, has the details.
The CEPT's Working Group for Frequency Management are studying whether member states throughout Europe should accept presentation of amateur radio licenses in a digitally signed electronic PDF format. The group has given permission for a feasibility study based upon the positive responses to a questionnaire submitted to the CEPT Working Group last year from officials in Romania. Romania is hoping to make its own radio license documents available as PDFs. Using the digital document format would allow hams the capability to travel Europe without needing paper copies of their licenses. Using mobile devices to display the documents would allow official checking in CEPT countries by reference to a central CEPT database. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Ed Durant, DD5LP.
In the U.S., a program overseen by the FCC, the ARRL, has just put a number of amateurs on notice for questionable on-air behavior. We hear more from Jerry Goodrich, KF5KRN.
Hams around the U.S. have been sent advisory notices from the Volunteer Monitor Program operated jointly by the FCC and the ARRL. A report released by Program Administrator Riley Hollingsworth, K4ZDH, gives details of the notices sent to hams deemed in violation of FCC Part 97. The program's July report, released recently, gives the results of more than 3,000 hours of observation combined on the HF, VHF, and UHF frequencies. Although these were advisory notices, one notification sent to a ham in Parks, Arizona, was referred to the FCC for enforcement action. In that instance, the ham is being reported for failing to honor a request to stay off a repeater. Some of the other notices include the following. A general class licensee in Acworth, Georgia, received a notice for failing to identify properly and for repeatedly making contact with unlicensed stations on 3.895 megahertz. A notice was sent to an extra class ham in Keensburg, New Jersey, involving threats made on the air to another operator while on 3.844 megahertz. Notices were also sent to some general class licensees for operating on 20 meters in the extra class portion of the band. Those hams are in Marco Island and Arcadia, Florida, and in Maryland. Technician class licensees also received notices. Those hams were in Spring Valley, Smith River, and Napoma, California, Oneonta, New York, Idaho Falls, Idaho, and Center, Texas. The notices indicate they were operating FT8 on frequencies not authorized to technician licensees. The Volunteer Monitor Program began operation in 2020. It was established to underscore the need for amateur compliance on the air. Trained volunteer monitors also recognize hams who are observed engaging in commendable conduct. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jerry Goodrich, KF5KRN.
What would be better than radio honoring radio? When it's amateur radio honoring professional radio, it's a natural combination, as we hear from Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
New England's oldest broadcast station is marking its 100th anniversary this year, and two amateur radio clubs in Massachusetts are inviting everyone to the party on the amateur bands. The Billerica Amateur Radio Society and the Hampton County Radio Association are having a special operating event planned for September 17th, through September 19th. The dates closely follow the first day Westinghouse put WBZ on the air as an AM radio station, September 15th, 1921. It began life as a 100-watt station in East Springfield, Massachusetts, but by the time it moved to Boston in 1931, it had a 15,000-watt transmitter. By 1933, that power had gone up to 50,000 watts. So be listening for the call signs W1W, W1B, W1Z, and WB1Z. Hams will be calling QRZ on all bands using CW, SSB, the digital modes, and, of course, AM. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
The first satellite launched by Mauritius has been busy doing its part to further students' education. Graham Kemp, VK4BB, brings us up to date.
Although the first CubeSat launched by the nation of Mauritius is still not available for amateur radio use, it has already accomplished an important educational mission in STEM education. According to the Mauritius Amateur Radio Society, students at three schools in Mauritius have received and decoded signals from the satellite. Known as MIRSAT-1, which stands for Mauritius Imagery and Radio Communication Satellite 1. AMSAT reported the news from the Ham Radio Society, saying that other schools and educational institutions are preparing to follow suit. According to AMSAT, the satellite is still in safe mode and being tested. The Radio Society expects to announce when hams will be able to use it. The satellite was deployed from the International Space Station on June 22. MIRSAT-1 has an expected lifetime of between 2 and 3 years, and during that time is expected to make ground contact with Mauritius 4 to 5 times daily. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Graham Kemp, VK4BB.
Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the N8NC repeater of the North Coast Amateur Radio Club in Brunswick, Ohio, on Sundays at 8 p.m. during the weekly information net. A young amateur radio operator with a strong volunteer spirit has become a silent key in his Connecticut hometown. Kevin Trotman, N5PRE, tells us about him.
Hams and first responders in Connecticut are grieving the loss of a valued member of the emergency response team in Bristol, Connecticut. Colin McFadden, KB1YYG, a volunteer firefighter, died on Thursday, August 12th, 2 days after he suffered a brain hemorrhage while fighting a blaze at a historical building in New Hartford. According to his obituary on the Funk Funeral Home website, he died 2 days after emergency surgery at the local hospital. Fire officials said doctors discovered that Colin had a form of leukemia that had been undiagnosed. Connecticut Community Emergency Response Team considered him a vital part of their operation. The group posted on its Facebook page that Colin was not only the team's ham radio specialist, but could always be counted on to participate when needed, including in community service events. According to the website of the Bristol CERT, Colin was especially active on the 2-meter cross community net on Thursdays. A member of the Burlington Volunteer Fire Department, he was also an advocate for people with autism. He got his amateur radio license with the support of the Insurance City Repeater Club and later became its vice president. Most recently, Colin's community service work as a ham included providing traffic control for COVID testing sites in Bristol and for the farm to family food distribution. Colin McFadden was 26 years old. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kevin Trotman, N5PRE.
A big weekend celebrating Canada's Ontario Regiment will be getting underway next month, and this year's event is adding something new. Amateur Radio. Andy Morrison, K9AWM, picks up the story from here.
The Ontario Regiment Museum, home to the largest collection of working military vehicles in North America, is about to mark an amateur radio first. The North Shore Amateur Radio Club, VE3OSH, will be operating during the museum's Aquino Tank Weekend, taking place on September 17th through the 19th. Club President Laird Solomon, VE3LKS, told Newsline that the idea to add ham radio to the museum's annual weekend evolved from a dialogue between the museum and one of the club's members who works there as a volunteer. They loved his suggestion that radio become a part of the activities which commemorate the key role the Ontario Regiment played in 1944 during the Battle of Aquino in Italy. Laird said the museum will be placing one of its World War II communications trucks at the activator's location, and hams will be operating CW from there. Operators will also be on the air at three other stations using SSB, FT8, and Yaesu Fusion, All-Star, and DMR. Laird told Newsline, quote, "We hope to be able to display the evolution of radio from World War II to today," end quote. Oshawa, the city where the museum is located, has strong ties to the Second World War. Laird told Newsline that not far from there, a secret spy training and high-power radio facility called Camp X was set up on the shores of Lake Ontario. It was that location where Hydra, a powerful radio station, would exchange coded messages with Allied headquarters in the U.S. and Britain. So many years later, the North Shore amateurs still have ties to this site. Laird said that the club was formed by some of the wartime operators who had been assigned to the Hydra station. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Andy Morrison, K9AWM.
The tea totaling is done, and the special event for the world's largest teapot has some impressive numbers. Here's Jim Dameron, N8TMW, with the results of this first-time nationwide activation.
The world's largest teapot in Chester, West Virginia, has a long history as a public attraction dating to the early 1900s. Now, thanks to amateur radio, it can claim one more distinction, a week-long special event activation that had 9,013 QSOs contacting all states in the U.S. as well as 68 countries. There was even a decoded SSTV signal from the International Space Station on Saturday, August 7th, during the community's Teapot Festival. This was the first year this formerly local radio event was a coast-to-coast activation, and operators reported massive pileups. Organizer Justin Shaw, W8LPN of the Hancock Auxiliary Communications Team, said there are plans in the works next year to include a bonus station from the UK. Meanwhile, the teapot itself, situated near West Virginia's border with Ohio and Pennsylvania, continues to be steeped in fame and glory. A number of radio operators who are not from the West Virginia area said during their QSOs that they now have plans to visit this unusual and obviously very inspirational teapot. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Dameron, N8TNW.
In the world of DX, listen for Elvira, IV3FSG, using the call sign 5X3R from Uganda through the 2nd of September. She is on 80 through 10 meters using SSB, RIDI, and PSK31. Send QSLs via IK2DUW, direct by the Bureau or Club Log. Fred, DL5YM, and his XLY, Tina, DL5YL, will be on the air as HB0/DL5YM and HB0/DL5YL, respectively, from Liechtenstein between the 5th and 28th of September. Their time in the air will be limited because they will be hiking during the day. Listen on 160 meter through 6 meter, where they will be using mostly CW with some SSB and RIDI. Be listening for them as well during the CQWWDX RIDI contest taking place September 25th and 26th. Send QSLs via their home call signs direct by the DARC Bureau or Club Log. Don't forget, you can pick up some great DX during the International Lighthouse Lightship Weekend on the 21st and 22nd of August. There are nearly 300 registered lighthouse lightship stations around the world that are planning to be on the air. Visit the website illw.net. Finally, it's been said that when all else fails, There's ham radio. Our last story takes this one step further because even when amateur radio isn't directly involved, when all else fails, there's nothing like ham radio friends. Here's Ralph Squalacci, KK6ITV, with that story.
Ham radio is what gave Bill Scott, K6PKL, and Skip Critcher, K7ZAA, the gift of friendship. But ironically, it was the connection via another form of radio communication, the cell phone, that gave Skip the gift of life. According to a report from CBS Sacramento, the Myrtle Point, Oregon radio operator was apparently felled by a stroke last month and desperately punched up numbers on his mobile phone, thinking he was calling his sister. Those numbers connected him instead with Bill, 500 miles away in San Joaquin County, California. Skip had difficulty speaking because his speech was slurred, but suddenly Bill realized who it was who was speaking and that his friend was in distress. Bill's wife, Sharon, a retired nurse, concluded Skip had just had a stroke. The couple called 911 and first responders in Oregon were dispatched to his home to transport him to a hospital. According to the news report, Skip is back at home recovering after 4 days in the hospital, and for now, he still has some impaired vision. One of the EMTs told Bill and Sharon he would have died within a few hours if he hadn't found help. While Skip recovers, he and Bill, who belongs to the Ham Radio Club in Manteca, have gone back to communicating under less urgent circumstances. They are also using their preferred means of getting in touch with one another, amateur radio. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Ralph Squillaci, KK6ITB.
With thanks to Amateur News Weekly, AMSAT, the ARRL, the Associated Press, Billerica Amateur Radio Society, Bristol CERT, CBS Sacramento, CQ Magazine, David Bihar, K7DB, Daily DX, FCC.gov, Funk Funeral Home, Laird Solomon, VE3 LKS, Manteca Rupin Bulletin, NBC Connecticut, Ohio Penn DX, QRZ.com, Southgate Amateur Radio News, ShortwaveRadio.de, Ted Randall's QSL Radio Show, WTWW Shortwave, and you, our listeners. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. You can write to us at newsline@arnewsline.org. For more information or to support us, visit our official website at arnewsline.org. For now, with Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York and our news team worldwide, I'm Stephen Kinford, NHWB, and Wadsworth, Ohio, saying 73. And as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2021. All rights reserved.
This is Keith Nelson of the Bindlestiff Family Circus, and we're not clowning around. You're listening to WGXE 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined for our Peace Bucket today by Stephen Zunes, professor at University of San Francisco. Stephen has been with us many times over the years to talk about various peace issues, and we wanted to get Stephen's perspective on the situation in Afghanistan, where the Afghan government collapsed much sooner than perspective. So, Stephen, what's your sort of analysis of what's going on and what lessons should the Biden administration take to heart?
As someone who's been a rather outspoken critic of the Biden administration's foreign policies on a number of levels, I am in the unusual position of coming to his defense here. I mean, clearly screwed up in terms of not being prepared for such a rapid advance of the Taliban and their dramatic and sudden takeover of the entire country in terms of evacuating translators and other supporters in a timely manner. But the decision to withdraw, which was a decision made by a president, Trump, I think was a long overdue one. I mean, the whole thing really was a Ponzi scheme from the start. It was unsustainable. And Biden had the courage to call it out. And he no more deserves blame for the collapse in Afghanistan than Gerald Ford does for the collapse of the Saigon regime in Vietnam. These, in both cases, they were a long time coming, and they are a result policy missteps and hubris and a lot of other things going back for decades under both a Democratic and Republican administrations. The underlying reality is that the Afghan army, nominally at least, had over 300,000 troops as opposed to only 75,000 troops in the Taliban. The Afghan government had an air force. They had heavy equipment. They had gotten, over $100 billion in U.S. arms and aid, not to mention training from the most powerful armed force in the world. And yet, and Taliban had none of those things. And yet, they are able to sweep across.
This is Barry White. And I know I had to hold you and make you mine. Now, I don't want to control you. I just want to have a good time. I'm in ecstasy when you're laying down next to me, listening to WGXC. Oh, no. It's ecstasy, yeah, when you are laying down next to me, listening to WGXC 90.7, Acre, Hudson, Catskill. This is so right for you and for me. This WGXC.
Listen to music and voices. Listen to art and discussion. Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to up and down. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to purple and green. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to the planet. Listen to ladies and dumplings. Listen to books. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to bath time and nap time. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to Stars and Stripes. Listen to Texas and listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeple. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Listen to clouds and leaves, bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio, WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Greenville Drive-In 32, a destination for movies and music under the stars of the Northern Catskills since 1959. Seasonal programming information at drivein32.com or 518-966-2177.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Amy Rigby of Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
After decades of war, Afghans deserve peace. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. After 2 decades of U.S. war, occupation, and bloodshed in Afghanistan, the Biden administration has been faulted for not predicting the speed with which the Afghan government, propped up by the American military and trillions of U.S. taxpayer dollars, would collapse.
The enmity with parties to the conflict are over.
That's Taliban spokesperson Zabihullah Mujahid speaking in a news conference from Kabul on Tuesday.
An inclusive government should be formed, and all parties and Afghans should participate in it.
Mujahid was speaking from the office last held by Dawa Khan Manipal, who was assassinated by the Taliban 10 days earlier during Friday prayers. Manipal was a chief spokesperson for President Ghani's government. Responding on the Democracy Now! News Hour, Kabul-based Afghan journalist Bilal Sarwawi said,
and the Afghan people would like to know, you know, where this road now leads, because people are thirsty for a political settlement. People are thirsty for peace.
Bilal was a refugee from the Afghan civil war of the 1990s, which in turn followed the bloody war with the Soviet Union. He learned English in Peshawar, Pakistan, and returned in 2001 as a TV news crew's fixer as the U.S. invasion began following the 9/11 attacks. Through 20 years of war and occupation, he grew into a seasoned frontline journalist. In a recent piece published in The Telegraph, Bilal described the impact covering violence has had. He said, "It has broken me from within. The number of coffins going back to small villages and valleys, that has been the worst feeling, like 1,000 sharp knives stabbing your heart," he said. Members of Congress have promised investigations into the flawed U.S. retreat. They should look at not just the past 2 weeks or 2 months, but at the whole 2 decades of this disastrous war and occupation. The Watson Institute estimates over 47,000 Afghan civilians were killed and over 75,000 injured during the war. The U.S. Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction calls these numbers both likely significant underestimations. Close to 70,000 Afghan soldiers and police have been killed, 50,000 Taliban and other opposition fighters, over 2,400 U.S. service members, and close to 4,000 U.S. contractors, including journalists, aid workers, and NATO soldiers killed, totaling at least 170,000 people killed overall. Amidst the chaos of the frantic U.S. withdrawal this week, several people clung to the outside of large U.S. military planes during takeoff, eventually plummeting to their deaths or dying in transit in an airplane wheel well. U.S. soldiers are reportedly conferring with Taliban forces to maintain order at the Kabul airport, and both groups have killed a number of civilians desperately vying for a flight out of the country. Matthew Ho was the first U.S. State Department official known to resign in protest over the Afghan war in 2009. He described the failed U.S. strategy in Afghanistan on Democracy Now!
Bombing villages and doing night raids, sending commandos 20 times a night into Afghan villages to kick in doors and kill people. And you saw the results of that. The results of that was every year the Taliban got stronger. Every year the Taliban gained more support.
Ho is not optimistic, adding,
"I think the only thing more tragic than what's happened to the Afghan people is that in a few days, America will have forgotten Afghanistan again."
Afghans won't forget the U.S., though. Zahra Nader is a graduate student in Toronto, Canada. Born in Bamiyan, Afghanistan, she fled to Iran with her family, where she grew up as a refugee, unable to attend school. They returned to Afghanistan in 2004, and after only a few years of schooling, became a reporter, eventually writing for the New York Times. Zahra left that dream job to move to Canada to ensure her young son had more opportunity than she had as a child. In a phone conversation, Zahra offered a damning summary of the U.S. role in Afghanistan, starting with the late 1970s. She said,
The U.S. supported Afghan Mujahideen, the Islamist fundamentalist group in Afghanistan, to fight a proxy war with the Soviets. So this happening with the direct U.S. support, the rise of the fundamentalists in Afghanistan. Till 2001, the situation of women's rights, the situation of human rights, did not matter to anybody in the U.S. or the Western countries. When the situation of Afghan women became a deal, when it became a big deal, in 2001, when the 9/11 happened. Before then, it seemed that we did not exist. They used us to frame their war.
For Zahra Nader, for Bilal Sarwari, and tens of millions of Afghans, the difficult task of rebuilding is beginning anew. The United States has a responsibility to support these efforts without trying to control them. The U.S. should also learn finally, as the most recent empire to flee Afghanistan, that you can't bomb your way to peace. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
From the WGXC Newsroom, This is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Sam Rowdens reports for Columbia Green Media that local activists, mainly from the Hudson-Catskill Housing Coalition, rallied in Hudson August 19th outside of Bliss Towers for eviction relief from local officials. The gathering comes before the Hudson Common Council is expected to vote on a good cause eviction law at its September 21st meeting. The proposed law, similar to one passed recently in Albany, would require landlords to provide a detailed reason to a judge when evicting a tenant. New York City public advocate Jemani Williams was among those gathered, and he spoke to the importance of having a home. Williams said, and I quote, "Someone's home is connected to everything they do. It's hard to get well coming home from the hospital if you don't have a place to live. It's harder for people to study coming home from school if they don't have a place to live. Being able to rip that away from someone at a moment's notice at the whims of someone of anyone simply is not right," end quote. Michael Gatine Suarez, managing director of the Hudson-Catskill Housing Coalition, said there is currently a local housing crisis as many New York City residents have bought property here. Gatine Suarez said, and I quote, "Can someone please point these people out to me that are the small mom-and-pop landlords? Because all I see are people from New York City coming out here, buying property, raising the rent, and then going back down to New York City with zero care about what's going on over here," end quote. Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson was also there and said the U.S. Census showed a 12% decrease in the population of Hudson over the last decade. He interpreted that data as people being priced out of the area. Johnson said, and I quote, "This is something that advocates have been talking about for years. We've seen our school district have to consolidate. We've seen our hospitals no longer work for birthing services, losing jobs," end quote. In July, Albany became the first municipality in New York to pass a good cause eviction law. Besides making evictions subject to a judge's oversight, the law also gives tenants a right to renew their lease and protects them from an annual rent increase of more than 5%. Sarah Tadeo reports in the Poughkeepsie Journal that New York officials distributed just $156 million so far from the state's rent relief program of about $2.7 billion in state and federal funding. At a state Senate hearing August 19th to examine New York's slow rollout of the rent relief program, state officials promised that tens of thousands of New York tenants should receive notice next week that they are approved for rent relief through the COVID-19 Emergency Rental Assistance Program. Senator Brian Kavanaugh, Democrat of Manhattan, who chairs the Senate Committee on Housing, Construction, and Community Development, said, and I quote, "Since the program's enactment, we've heard persistent concerns from tenants and landlords and many advocates around the state that the program's implementation has been far too slow and that the money has not gone out at the speed that the urgency of the crisis requires," end quote. The program covers up to 12 months of unpaid rent and utilities since the beginning of the pandemic for those who meet certain income and hardship eligibility measures. State officials said they were overwhelmed at first. Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance Commissioner Michael Hines said, and I quote, "There's no question that the start of New York's rental assistance program was delayed, and there's also no question that technical issues have occurred, but we're successfully addressing these issues," end quote. The state has reduced the application process document requirements and added 350 state employees to process the applications. Read more about this story in the Poughkeepsie Journal. Bernadette Hogan and Emily Crane report in the New York Post that moving trucks were being filled outside New York's executive mansion August 20th as Governor Andrew Cuomo is stepping down on August 24th. Cuomo is resigning after a report from the attorney general outlined 11 sexual harassment allegations against the governor, who is also being investigated for various ethics failures. The destination of the moving truck loaded with the governor's things is unclear, as he owns no property. He moved out of his ex-girlfriend's Mount Kisco home in 2019. Wherever he goes, he may face criminal charges as investigations into the sexual harassment claims continue in several counties around the state. Read more about this story in the New York Post. Porcupine Soup reports that Catskill residents Doreen Davis and Kelly Consul were named to the Columbia Green Community College Board of Trustees. It was announced this week. Davis does not have an education background, but is a former Town of Catskill supervisor and retired pharmaceutical executive who is running for a seat on the Green County Legislature this year. Consul has served as a school counselor at Catskill Senior High School. Ned Schneier, PhD chair of Columbia Green Community College Board of Trustees, said, and I quote, "Doreen fills a vacancy with an incredible resume and familiarity with the college through her many years organizing and supporting our annual gala. Kelly gives us hands-on experience in our continuing attempts to improve our student outreach. I could not be happier with these two appointments," end quote. Read more about this story at Porcupine Soup. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
If you look on the WGXC community calendar, WGXC.org, you'll see on Sunday, August 22nd, there are two regional shows to attend. First, Trombone Shorty and the Orleans Avenue Band perform at the Ulster Performing Arts Center at 7 p.m. in Kingston. And also, The Roots perform at Mass MoCA in Western Massachusetts at 8 p.m. Both shows are listed on the WGXC community calendar at WGXC.org, where you can go and list your own event by clicking on the Add an Event button on the page and filling in the forms, and you'll soon hear your event read on the radio and read around the world in the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Greenville Drive-In 32, a destination for movies and music under the stars of the Northern Catskills since 1959. Seasonal programming information at drivein32.com or 518-966-2177.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Bindlestiff Family Circus of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
This is ARRL Audio News, your weekly summary of news highlights from the world of amateur radio. If you retransmit audio news through a repeater, listen for the Morse code K character, followed by 4 seconds of silence. That's your cue to stop transmitting so that your repeater timer can reset.
Hey, how you doing this week? I'm Rick Lindquist, WW1ME, and this is ARRL Audio News for Friday, August 20th, 2021. Radio Club of Haiti President Jean-Robert Gaillard, HH2JR, was among those reporting significant structural damage in the wake of an August 14th magnitude 7.2 earthquake there. A request has been posted to keep these primary International Amateur Radio Union Region 2 emergency frequencies clear, 3750, 7150, and 14330 kHz. At this time, it's not known if amateur radio volunteers have had a role in the recovery effort. The 1229 UTC quake occurred on the end of Hispaniola that's closest to Cuba, and about 80 miles west of Haiti's capital of Port-au-Prince. "We will stay alert," said IARU Region 2 Emergency Coordinator Carlos Alberto Santa Maria Gonzalez, CO2JC. Haiti also found itself in the direct path of then-tropical depression Grace, which dumped heavy rain across southern Haiti, creating mudslides in some areas.
The previously announced schedule of FCC amateur radio application fees likely will not go into effect before next year. FCC staff confirmed during a recent virtual meeting with volunteer examiner coordinators that the agency is still working on the necessary changes to the Universal Licensing System, ULS, software, and elsewhere that must be in place before it starts collecting the fees from hams. The FCC now estimates the fees won't go into effect until early next year. Once effective, a $35 application fee will apply to new, modified, that's upgrade and sequential call sign change, renewal, and vanity call sign applications. All fees will be per application. It won't cost you anything to change your name, mailing, or email address. Volunteer examiner teams will not have to collect the $35 fee. Once the FCC application fee goes into effect, new and upgrade applicants will pay the exam session fee to the VE team as usual, but they'll pay the $35 application fee directly to the FCC using what's called the FCC Pay Fees system. The FCC will email a link to the applicant's license grant. The FCC no longer provides printed licenses. I'm Rick Lindquist, WW1ME, and this is ARRL Audio News, heard in Lapeer County, Michigan, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. on the 14662 repeater, courtesy of the Lapeer County Amateur Radio Association. Time now for the AMSAT report. Bruce Page, KK5DO, offers a few of his tricks for working the SO50 satellite. A small handheld beam will work to hear the satellite on 70 centimeters, and he says you can use a typical mobile 2-meter antenna to transmit. But as the satellite gets higher in the sky, it will become invisible to a vehicle-mounted antenna. Bruce has his on the trunk, though, and when the satellite gets close to 45 degrees, he just hits the trunk release, which changes the antenna's elevation. Reverse the process for the other half of the pass. Bruce also writes down call signs and grids he can copy when he first hears SO50. This way he's ready when someone comes back. They'll probably be on his list, so he's not frantically trying to write down call signs while trying to make adjustments. Just check off the stations you work. He says a recorder, like the one on a smartphone, also is helpful. The AMSAT report comes to us each week courtesy of Bruce Page, KK5DO. The International Amateur Radio Union Region 1 monitoring system reports that in addition to the already well-known intruders on the ham band, some new or rarely heard signals have been spotted, including a burst signal from an over-the-horizon radar in China. The IARUMS July newsletter reported that this signal, in 3.8-second bursts, was encountered repeatedly on different 40 and 20-meter frequencies. NATO military systems were more active in various amateur bands as well, using an alphabet soup of modes such as MIL-188, 110A, Link 11, CLU, and SLU, and STANAG 4285 and 4481 FSK, and MIL-188, 14A, ALE. Here's a STANAG 4285 signal, by the way. You want to hope something like that doesn't open up next to your frequency. FSK, ARQ, and PSK ARQ emissions with typical 600 baud, 600 hertz, or even 1200 hertz have been conspicuous for some time, attributed to North Korea. Of course, over-the-horizon radars predominate, and some broadcasters interfere regularly too, often on 40 meters. The Alexander Grimton Friendship Association reports an incredible number of listener reports, 524 in all, for its July 4th Alexanderson Day transmissions from SAQ, the Alexanderson Alternator Very Low Frequency Station in Sweden. SAQ transmits on 17.2 kilohertz. SAQ made two successful transmissions to the world from the old Alexanderson alternator. Here's how Jay Rusgrove, W1VD, heard the signal in Connecticut with a lot of noise, so listen closely. The Alexanderson alternator is an electromechanical radio transmitter dating to the 1920s. It's a behemoth, uses an electric motor to spin what's essentially an AC alternator like the one in your car, except much, much faster. The antenna system at SAQ is massive. ARRL Audio News is heard in the Livingston, Michigan area Saturdays at 9 p.m. on the 224.5 repeater. A sailing vessel with a prominent role in ham radio history, the schooner Bowden, is a century old this year. Now owned by the Maine Maritime Academy, the 88-foot training vessel was built in Maine specifically for Arctic exploration. The Bowden, this is a wooden hull boat, and its crew relied on amateur radio for communication during Explorer Donald B. McMillan's Arctic Expedition of 1923 and on the McMillan-McDonald Byrd Expedition of 1925, thanks in part to ARRL co-founder Hiram Percy Maxim, W1AW. Don Mix, 1TS of Bristol, Connecticut, was recruited to accompany the crew as its radio operator. The transmitter operated on the medium wave bands of 185, 220, and 300 meters, running 100 watts, and using the call sign WNP for Wireless North Pole. Check out the ARRL website for a photo of Don Mix in the Bowden radio room. And that's ARRL Audio News for Friday, August 20th, 2021. For details on these and other amateur radio news happenings, visit the ARRL website, www.arrl.org, or better yet, subscribe to the weekly ARRL letter via your ARRL website member profile. And let us know where you hear ARRL Audio News with an email to audionews, one word, at arrl.org. For now, I'm Rick Lindquist, WW1ME73, and we'll see you next time, everybody.
ARRL Audio News is produced by the American Radio Relay League, the National Association for Amateur Radio. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment about ARRL Audio News, email us at audionews@arrl.org. This program is copyright ARRL, all rights reserved. 73, and thanks for listening.
You are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Catskill, Acre, Hudson, Chatham, East Chatham, South Chatham, and North Cooksackie. Hands-on community radio.
Here's Catskill's Brian DeWan with the song Shooting Star from his 2007 album Sleep on It. Thank you.